Welcome back to Pandya Arbitration Global's podcast. My name's Alana Harris and I'll be hosting for this week. And this week we're discussing construction law and we're joined by Dr. Pandya here today. The first question I'd like to discuss is, why are investment treaties so important for construction companies?
Well, investment treaties are treaties between two countries, so the agreements between states, to protect foreign construction companies. And most countries have at least a dozen or so, if not more, of these treaties between themselves and other countries. So, for example, the UK has a investment treaty that protects UK contractors working in India. And the way they are protected is that if they're doing construction projects for government bodies out in India, and for some bizarre reason the government decides to breach that contract unfairly, not pay them, and effectively they can't get the remedies they want through local courts, they can go to an independent construction arbitration panel, which would be an investment treaty arbitration panel, and try and get the monies they are owed. Sometimes it's not just construction companies that are protected by these treaties, it's also investors in construction projects. So where you're a construction company, for example, and you've partnered with a financing person or an investor to build a dam or a bridge in some part of the world, and the government interferes with that project by, let's say, stopping you from building the works, or perhaps even taking your construction equipment, which happened in one case I worked on many years ago, you may want to get compensation for that construction project. So this is particularly going to be of interest after Brexit. It applies now, but it'll be of interest after Brexit, because we will have a lot of these investment treaties being applicable to investors who partner up with construction companies in the UK to do projects overseas. And there'll be new markets outside the European Union that we'll be trying to get work for our contractors from, and profits for our investors. So having that protection in place, and the minimum standards in those treaties to protect your construction project and your investment, will give you another degree of comfort as a construction manager and as an investor in a construction project. That should something horrible happen to you on the ground, there is a system of legal rules that applies. And typically these treaties protect you from having your investment project or a construction project seized. So that's why they're of importance. And as such, they provide an important framework of protection to grow the global economy, both in terms of protecting overseas construction projects, but also because a lot of those projects in the developing world, should British companies go out there, or companies from any country go out to another country and help with bridge building, road building, hospital building, or any kind of government or infrastructure project, there's an overriding legal regime which protects them from being harmed. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple of the cases you've worked on, but what are some of the most common causes of these construction disputes that you've come across?
Well, there are commonalities between domestic construction claims and international construction claims. And what normally goes wrong is I would say the bulk of them would be focused around variations of some sort. So there are claims which do with negligence and lack of proper performance by the contractor, but those don't tend to be the bulk of the claims in my experience. Most of the claims are of things that happen unexpectedly during construction project, which adversely affect the pricing or the pre-pricing of that project. And what has happened is the contract that these parties have not adequately anticipated those variations, or in many cases there is no contractual provision at all for variations. So what you often get is a contractor having to cash flow that variation through his own subcontractors and suppliers, and an employer being a little bit reticent about who's to blame for that variation, and that can come at loggerheads. So in most jurisdictions now, construction disputes are managed, so they don't immediately end up in a court or an arbitration. There's normally a system of process that happens, so there'll be softer avenues for people to actually have a debate over the dispute and try to get to the bottom of it before too much money is spent on lawyers. And very often, one of the common routes for that in contracts will be either a soft form of adjudication, which involves a contract administrator or an engineer, and the parties will try and get the engineer to decide, or the contract administrator adjudicator to decide on what the payments should be that are due for any varied works. So the most common problems that I found are to do with those variations or unanticipated works that haven't been priced in, and they could be structural and so in nature. So for example, you know, the soil or whatever it is, does not, or the ground does not take the weight of for example of the construction as anticipated. Something's been missed in soil sampling or the structural estimations at the front of the contract, or sometimes it can happen during other reasons. For example, you simply want to change the design halfway through, or you want to sort of delegate further work to the contractor that has been originally been anticipated, and with that you get a different set of pricing as an employer, which you're not happy with, but the contractor can only price it at a different level because these were not anticipated materials or works at the start of the project.
Okay, and so how would a FIDIC construction dispute end up in international arbitration?
So with the new Red Book in FIDIC, and you see that commonly throughout the different types of FIDIC contracts, and just to give a bit of background, FIDIC contracts have been around longer than any other international standard construction contract. There's normally, you can split them up into two types. There's different coloured books, but there's the ones where the contractors are doing all the work and all the design work and sort of almost like turnkey contracts. And then I would put into that bracket the sort of hybrid type contracts where you've got a bit of stuff done by the employer to the design or management, and a bit done by the contractor. And then there's the other end of the spectrum from a turnkey, where the builder's only doing, the contractor's only doing the contracting, most of the design and structural work and regulatory work, and making sure you've got the licenses or permissions to do the work, all covered by the employer. So that's something that's that's how you would categorise FIDIC contracts. But in terms of elevation to dispute, sensibly, there's a few series of steps that have to take place before you get to that final arbitration stage. And most of those focus around the civil engineer making the initial soft decisions on what are disparities between the employer and the contractor. So. And then you almost have that going to now what's called a separate soft adjudication panel, which is a dispute adjudication board in FIDIC, or a soft adjudication process. So if you're not happy with the engineer's decision, you don't elevate it to an adjudicatory board decision. And only failing that do you end up in the costly litigation process of arbitration. Though it is quite possible to spend a lot of sums up to that point. So it stops you from going full bam and pulling the gun on your arbitration or litigation of the dispute. You have to go through these step-by-step processes, and the idea being that they will protect parties from becoming too aggressive so that you can go back to doing the project. You get to make sure the most important thing happens, which is the final build of whether it's a power plant or a road or a sewage treatment plant, whatever it is you're building, that actually occurs. You don't end up destroying the relationship between the parties to human relationship, so that the works end up not occurring, because that will put further liability on the contractor or result in a set-off claim against the employer. So I think FIDIC have done that sensibly, and that probably needs further work in all the current editions of the book going forward. And we'll probably see that over time we'll get better and better at dealing with dispute resolution pathway. One of the things that's commonly wrong with all construction contracts is that they are a work in progress, so a lot of things, those specific clauses can be better defined in the contract itself. So sometimes you get courts still deciding what certain things mean. For example, in the UK, there's still a sort of a mixed match of basically definitions over and understanding of what the word defect means. So that kind of ambiguity, even though you use the word in the contract to create some certainty, can still lead to a dispute over whether X or Y issue is a defect or not. So I think the more specific we are with what we mean by contractual phrases when we're contracting, the less likely we are to end up in that final arbitration stage, and the better we'll be able to manage that in the earlier parts of the process of FIDIC dispute resolution.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that's very useful for a lot of the listeners. So if people are listening are interested, what can they do to find out more or to get some more information?
So we do run a series of workshops on both international and domestic construction claims and construction law. We're happy to, a lot of those places are free, I think we do about a dozen places free, and there's a charge off that, but we're more than happy to give people some of our brochures on the basic things to not to do, and we're more than happy to arrange further seminars for architects, engineers, or contractors, or employers even that want to learn more about this stuff. But we're happy to receive emails on that front, and I think our email address is on our website, and I think it's info@parbitrationg.com. So I think it's we're quite easy to get hold of.
Great, good stuff. Thank you.